Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 11th of August. We've been doing a series of programs on healthcare and how it's delivered in other countries in the world, thinking that we might be able to learn something that we will bring to the table as we debate healthcare reform in the United States. We are having a special conference at Frederick Hospital here in Milwaukee on healthcare reform on September 16. For a full 2 hours, we'll take our show to Frederick and speak with people who are uninsured, with doctors, with nurses, with people from insurance companies and community health clinics, all of that, and members of Congress we've invited as well. So in preparation for that day and in preparation for some kind of health reform that will happen in this country, we thought it would be valuable to look at other countries. Today it is France. Next week, we're going to be looking at the healthcare system that members of Congress have and figure out how they got their wonderful system of healthcare and whether or not we can expect something similar. Our guest this hour has written extensively about healthcare in France and actually international healthcare. He's the author of several books. His first book examined the 20th century development of France's social programs, including healthcare, retirement pensions, workers' compensation, and family welfare. And his second book adopts a critical approach to healthcare through an international historical comparison. This book is Differential Diagnoses, a Comparative History of Healthcare Problems and Solutions in the United States and in France. He says that Americans often assume that all European healthcare systems are alike, something called, quote, socialized medicine, under which the government, for good or ill, runs everything. But he says most do not understand that there are major differences among European countries in how they pay for and deliver medical care. Professor Dutton is Associate Professor of History at Northern Arizona University and Executive Director of the Interdisciplinary Health Policy Institute. His earlier book, Origins of the French Welfare System, and he has done a lot of other things. He has had fellowships at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, the Brookings Institution, and the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, the National Endowment for the Humanities, traveled extensively in Europe and Asia, and has lived in France for several years. So he knows this personally as well. Our phone number as we talk about France is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor Paul Dutton, thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be here, Kathleen.
Yeah, very nice to have you here. You, in the book, talk about the World Health Organization rating France's healthcare system as the best in the world in 2001, the U.S., I believe, 36th in the world. Do those figures hold true now?
Well, I would say roughly they do, yes, although there was a variety of criteria that the WHO considered, and the United States did score well on some of them. And in fact, the U.S. was at 37th, just to correct your earlier statistic. But the French still have a very good healthcare system. And in subsequent studies, the WHO study being a few years old now, like close to nine, the French healthcare system continues to run with the best in the world.
Mm-hmm. And what makes something the best? Is it a matter of all people being insured or latest in technology, or what is it?
Well, the WHO criteria were fairly clear. They were looking at access to care. They were looking at life expectancy, the equity of financing, provider responsiveness, which the actually United States did fairly well on, assuming you were insured. And something that the United States didn't do very well on was amenable mortality, that is, the treatment of health conditions that if dealt with promptly, could avoid premature death.
Oh.
And that is something where the French scored in the top range and the U.S. in the last. So there's a variety of statistics here and criteria that are used. Health outcomes, of course, would be included in that list. It really, the French, it's a much healthier population than the United States, and they have good access to care, and the financing is quite fair, if you will. There's a good equity of financing.
Mm-hmm. And it is, would you describe it as a public-private or private-public system?
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's, you actually, in your little run-up to our discussion here, said what I often say in these interviews is that these healthcare systems, which I'm glad that Americans are looking at them now, it was less true in the last time we talked about healthcare reform. They're as different from each other as they are from the United States. In fact, I could make an argument here that the French healthcare system is more similar to the American than it is to the British, you see, or even to the Canadian. So these are very different healthcare systems, so it's important to look at them. The French system, to come back directly to your question, is very much a public-private mix. They have a large public insurer, like our Medicare, which is also a large public insurer, and then they have supplemental private health insurance companies, both for-profit and not-for-profit. And so basically, and maybe we can explore this more deeply since we have a fair amount of time here today, is the Sécurité sociale, which is the large, which we'll just call Social Security for our purposes, provides coverage to virtually everyone in the country and provides a good basic public health insurance package. And then about 90% of the French population also carries supplemental coverage that comes from a private health insurer. Oftentimes, that private health insurance is provided by their employer, but oftentimes it's not, and they go out into the open market and buy it.
Mm-hmm. And tell me in a little more detail about the employer aspect of this. Is that where you get your you sign up through your employer, or it's a government thing? You get a card, or what is it?
It is right now. About half of the funding comes from paycheck deductions, just as for most people in this country who buy health insurance through their employer, and then the other half is raised through general income taxes. They're trying to move away from the employer-based system, and I think that's a good thing, and I think a lot of healthcare economists agree. I'm a historian, I think, as you mentioned in your setup there. So they, but the workplace for both the United States and France, and that's one of the very interesting similarities between the countries, is that it's the workplace from which workers since the 19th century, of course in small numbers in the beginning, and mostly men at that time, gained some security from the risk of illness and accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Tell me if the French had a big struggle, because they, I know, have moved incrementally toward insuring more and more of their population, so now it's almost the whole population, but it always wasn't that way, was it? They had to move in that direction.
No, in fact, that's one of, I think, one of the big lessons from French healthcare is that they never had a big bang. And so those of us, you know, who are observing now the debates in Washington and now out in the, you know, in the country at these town hall meetings and whatnot that members are trying to do, sometimes there's this assumption going into this that, you know, we're going to do this in the next few months and then we're going to be done with it and we're going to get what we have and that'll be it. That is not the, if you look as a historian, as I do, that's not the way healthcare reform works. In very, very few countries does it work like that. And certainly the French is a good case. They did not achieve universal coverage until the year 2000. It wasn't like after the Second World War, all of a sudden they set up this big system, which is really what the British did. I mean, they did set up the National Health Service. Maybe we can talk about the NHS a little bit today, too, but for contrast purposes. But the French had a series of reforms, and maybe I could elaborate on this a little bit, because that's where the bargains come in, the compromises, which are so interesting to look at for us as Americans trying to figure out where to go. They have two grand bargains in France. The first one were with the physicians, and this goes all the way back actually to 1930. There was a movement in the country throughout the 1920s to set up some sort of national health insurance system. And the physicians, like in this country, very similar. If you read the medical journals of the Journal of the American Medical Association and its analogous French publications, the language was very, very similar. They didn't want any sort of government involvement in health care, and everything that was bad about healthcare was exemplified with what the Germans were doing, which was a compulsory health insurance program. So the physicians were very opposed in France throughout the 1920s. And finally, though, in 1930, there was a large compromise made. The lead physicians organization came forward And they had been promising just to not work with the National Health Insurance Program as it was developing. And they said, look, we'll go along with this. We'll participate as long as you protect patient choice of physician and you protect, by statute, our freedom of diagnosis and therapies, right, this clinical decision-making. And that compromise really has held fairly well to the present day. In fact, French physicians now, even though the government is more involved in the French healthcare system than the American government, French physicians, on average, for sure, have more clinical decision-making freedoms than American physicians, who are so tied up by the insurers in the networks that they need to participate. Managed care networks, they're always being monitored for how it's affecting the bottom line. And so this is something that I think is an important sort of case to look at as to how Americans might think, and that's one of the larger lessons here. Americans need to understand that the government, in the case of France, the French people viewed the state, the government, as protecting the liberties of the physicians. The other grand bargain, I referred to two, was with the insurers. And in the 1920s, the French had a system of health insurance dating from the 19th century, which was based on mutual benefit societies, would be the best term, best translation for it. And that's what really caught my interest, especially this past summer, because some of the members of Congress were talking about cooperatives.
Yes.
And that really kind of rings of these mutual benefit societies that the French had in the 19th century and into the early 20th century. Anyway, they were providing health insurance, not to the whole population, but to about 25 or 30% of it. And they were very concerned when some sort of national health insurance program was being considered by the legislature. Finally, there was this compromise made by which those mutual societies remained involved for their membership and continued to administer health insurance going forward. And that's really the two big bargains, I think, in 1930 and the early 30s that put France on the road to a system that would eventually achieve universal coverage. Those mutual societies became the supplemental health insurers that I spoke of at the top of discussion here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that happened after the Second World War.
Let's go back to the doctors for a moment.
Yeah.
I understand, tell me if I'm wrong here, that physicians make a lot less money in France, but their education is paid for. Which makes sense to me, if you're going to be a doctor, which is a worthy thing to do in life, you get your college taken care of, so you don't have to have huge amounts of debt when you leave. Can you talk about the difference in doctors between the two countries?
Right. Well, yeah, the physicians make less in France, that's for sure. The numbers, sort of the average numbers, you know, U.S. primary care physicians make about, by average, about in the mid-ones, right, around $150,000 a year. French primary care physicians are at $94,000 a year. Specialists, there's also a difference. American specialists are making, on average, about $275,000, many of them much, much more. And French specialists make about $130,000 a year. So you see there's quite a pay differential. But the French physicians, of course, this is, and not to say that there's not tensions here, there certainly is, and anybody, any of your listeners who have traveled in France and seen the French on strike or know enough about French politics, it's very contentious. But the point here is that French physicians have been able to deal with these salaries, which are quite good, in great measure because they come out of medical school without debt, nor do they have to buy, or they do buy it, but the premiums are very, very reasonable, almost nominal by American standards, the malpractice insurance. So because they have a system of malpractice in which most of the claims are dealt with by administrative judges and citizen panels that can put an end to most claims very quickly. There are claims that go forward into the court system and are very expensive. In fact, I have a very close friend who was severely injured and ended up with a 5 million euro claim.
Oh my!
So it doesn't like it does happen. France has a lively tort system, just like in this country. But in the case of medical affairs, it really they have a system that they've been able to disallow the tort system from causing tremendous increases in malpractice insurance premiums.
Mm-hmm. They're suffering from, I believe, a huge increase, and I wonder what the differences are between the two countries in terms of the cost of medical care in France. What are the significant costs in France, and what are they doing to rein in health care costs from spiraling out of control?
They're working very hard. I mean, you cannot right. find a healthcare system on the planet among industrialized countries, anyway, that doesn't have this tremendous medical cost inflation. First of all, the listeners should know that they're spending significantly less than we are, about 11% of GDP, right, about $4,500 per person. We're spending about 17% of GDP, $7,100. But they, it's interesting because the French have come over and stole a couple of pages from the American Managed Care Playbook. Uh-huh. They are trying they have more primary care providers, and they're reemphasizing and reinforcing that system. You asked about doctors, and if I can just go back to it just for a second.
Of course.
About half of French physicians are primary care doctors, family practice docs. In the United States, the number is more like a quarter. And if you go into rural areas in this country, it's less than that. I mean, we really are in trouble in terms of primary care in this country. The French are reinforcing the primary care because it costs less. Many ailments can be dealt with it in that domain. And so what they've done is they've instituted a system. I mentioned before that part of this deal with physicians was that patients can have complete choice of doctor. They have not violated that, but what they've said, now this is the public insurer, right, the French Social Security system, they have said you need to select a primary care physician and go to that person regularly. You can select any primary care physician in the country. We don't care. There are no provider networks that like Americans get caught up in. But you need to select that person and then go to them regularly, and that person can go ahead and refer you on to specialists, you see. And that, as I said before, is a little bit of a piece of the playbook, I think, from a managed care from the United States from the 90s. You can still go to, as a French person, you can still go to directly to a specialist if you want, but your reimbursement rate is going to be a bit lower, mm-hmm. you see. So they haven't disallowed it entirely, but this is the way they're sort of using the reimbursement rates to direct people into primary care where a lot of ailments can be dealt with.
Dr. Paul Dutton is our guest this hour. We're looking at the French healthcare system as we continue our series on how healthcare is delivered in various countries in the world. He's the author of two books most pertinent to our discussion, Differential Diagnoses, A Comparative History of Healthcare Problems and Solutions in the United States and France. He's also author of Origins of the French Welfare State. He is a historian of European and American social reform and we're happy to have him. He's also lived in France, so that makes a difference, huh, to understand the system firsthand. So we're going to take phone calls. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, okay, that's talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, we're going to do something a little bit different for us. Christiana Amanpour will be with us for the first or second of the half hours. She's the chief international correspondent for CNN, and she has a two-hour documentary, Generation Islam, on the battle for the hearts and minds of the youth of the Muslim world. It's going to debut this coming Thursday, and we will have her with us tomorrow. We also have not had a chance to pay tribute to the work of Walter Cronkite, and we will do that tomorrow as well during this time period. So A lot going on from 10 to 11 tomorrow, as there is now as we look at the French healthcare system with Paul Dutton, our guest. Dr. Dutton knows the system well and is making comparisons for us and is the author of books on the subject. We shared our calls with Dr. Mike from South Milwaukee. Hello. You want to, hello?
Hello.
Yes, go right ahead. You want to turn your radio down, please?
My radio is off.
It is? Hello. Oh, okay. Well, just go ahead.
Okay. I'm getting this funny echo. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. But we can hear you, so just say what you want to say. We'll hear you fine.
Okay. I worked in France.
Yes?
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
I worked in France as a radiation oncologist and also practiced in the United States. I'm retired now, and I'd like to say the following. The care that I witnessed in France was unequivocally better than anything I've ever experienced in my career in this country, and I've worked at institutions like University of Wisconsin, hospitals in Madison, and also the Cleveland Clinic. Hmm. They have a system there of centralization of cancer care. For instance, in the city of Milwaukee, there might be two or three institutions where you would receive cancer care, and that's it. They centralize things, they consolidate things, they hold on costs by consolidations. They never would have 10 to 15 hospitals in a metro area the size of Milwaukee where you receive high-tech cancer care, and that contributes to a better care at much reduced cost. And I'd like your guest to comment about the centralization of high-tech therapies in France, which we don't do here.
Yeah, that's a great question, and obviously you know about, more about the particular cancer care that you were involved in. The French have a system, and it's run out of the Ministry of Health, and it's the carte sanitaire, which is the it's a medical map, really, in which they are looking at things, for example, MRI machines and very expensive other expensive imaging devices, and they just want to avoid redundant and excess technologies, because that's something that, as you know, as a physician, that's really driving up costs these days. It's not just the physicians that are ordering the tests for defensive medicine purposes, but also the hospitals that are buying them because they want to be better and attract the suburban, well-insured patients as well, and maybe those hospitals, though, are just down the street from one another. And the French system, they are working to avoid that, and it's done centrally. And so there you have a good example of where the government can really play a very helpful role, I think, in it doesn't affect the care that people are receiving. And there are, in France, of course, as you know, it's not like in Britain where there's waiting lines for elective procedures. In fact, the British often send patients that can't be treated quickly to France.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. So this is a really, I'm glad that the caller brings this point to light, that there is a centralization of these very expensive devices.
Yeah. Are you still with us, Mike?
Yes.
What kind of reform are you looking for as we try to reform our system in America? What's most important?
I think the reforms have to be so extensive and so dramatic. I think they have to parallel the French system, but I don't see it happening. There are too many vested interest groups that are making too much money, and you know it's pretty much as you've discussed. We have to centralize high-tech equipment. We have to provide education for physicians so that they don't go into extreme debt, and we can't allow, for instance, in my specialty, 40 radiation oncology centers in the state of Wisconsin, when probably 15 or 20 would service the entire state. But I don't see this happening. I don't see this happening with any of the proposals being made by Congress, because there's too much money being made by interest groups that weigh power over the system. It's not going to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, you know, I guess I I'm a bit more sanguine, and partly, but not in the short term. I mean, I think perhaps the caller, and I don't want to speak for him, but, you know, this is true, I think, in the to the 3 to 5 year range, we may not be able to make the kind of changes that we need to make. But what I'm hoping is that the reform, and I think the president will end up signing something. I guess his political instincts are to sign something. But it may not be the last thing. It may be the successor administration that grabs some of the problems that are left behind. And I'll go back to that point because I think it's so important that, you know, the system that the French set up in 47, coming out of the Second World War, really is essential to the system that they still have. But it was modified several times as they brought in more people. They achieved 90-some percent of coverage by the 1980s, but it took subsequent reforms to get to full universal coverage. I'm not saying that doesn't upset me, that there are, as the caller says, some vested interests, especially in the health insurers, who will continue to reap disproportionate benefits from the system, maybe for another decade, at the great cost to our taxpayers and to the lives of many of our citizens. But I guess I'm, as a historian, I'm seeing us on a road, and it's quite inexorable. I mean, the most radical position that we could take is, of course, to do nothing, because it will bankrupt the country.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand, and let me mention this now, is that about half of the health care in this country is paid for by the federal government. And so if people are worried about the deficit now, wait a few more years as the population grays, and elderly people who increasingly go on to Medicare and into Medicaid for their nursing home coverage, because many of them don't have the savings to cover that,
yes,
then this is going to really push
yes.
things very quickly. And I think that moving toward an efficient public insurer will be the answer that emerges. Now, it may not emerge this fall in the bill that goes to the president's desk, but I think ultimately it will be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you brought up the issue, and it's something we don't even discuss very much. We are going to have this huge population, the baby boom population, moving into, as you said, I've dealt with this with my parents, and those of us who have realized that going into nursing home situations or some kind of assisted care for even a short period of time could just make you bankrupt. You have nothing. Everything is gone. You know, it seems as though we have to deal with that. And we have so much to deal with when it comes to health concerns in this country.
Yes, and that is, and the other part of that that's related is that we should remember this 80-20 rule, I think, that sometimes gets lost. And so I like to repeat it as often as I can, that 80% of our healthcare spending goes to pay for the 20% of us that are least lucky, that have had bad accidents and trauma of some sort, or have chronic conditions, or chronically ill. And so that's where the big money is. It's
mm-hmm.
The big money is in managing diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
The big money is in catching cervical cancer early,
mm-hmm.
Breast cancer, respiratory disorders. I mean, these are the things I talked at the top of the hour about amenable mortality rates in the United States. They're dismal compared to all of the other countries in Europe and Japan. We're ranking last. If we could get a system that deals with prevention and primary care and pour more resources into that, we could save ourselves a bundle of money.
Yeah. Let's go to Katie from Appleton next. Hi, Katie.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I'm calling to just, I just would like to know if he could discuss two things that came to mind for me. I'm from a medical background. My husband was an internist, and over the years, it seems like, and in our case, whenever we would try to recruit a physician, primary care was just impossible to find someone that, there's very few of them left, and the ones that are left are kind of bailing because of so many of the problems that come with doing primary care.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I would like to know what the guest feels can be done to recruit young students to go into primary care when it really is a difficult field at this stage of the game. That's one problem. And the other one that came to mind when I was listening to him talk was, over all the years that we did take patients with Medicare patients, each physician seems to take a different amount, and there's never been a standard, or maybe there is, but a percentage that they're required to take. And I know the term cherry picking might sound familiar to the physician. And I would just like to hear what he thinks about changing the cherry picking and changing the way that we could recruit good primary docs, because we're sure going to need them.
Right. Let me take the second question first, and just for, because I need to clarify. The cherry picking is a term that's used in the insurance industry, and may be used among doctors as well. I'm not sure. But I know it's commonly used in the insurance industry, which means that especially in the individual market and in the small business market, where a small business person or an individual calls an insurance provider and says, look, I'd like to buy some insurance, and then they undergo what's called medical underwriting, which means that the applicant is subjected to a review of their medical history and past claims and something that might have been cancerous or precancerous, for example, in terms of skin or something. And if this is the whole pre-existing condition circumstances that have been talked in the media a lot about recently, and that is something that doesn't happen in France. Everything is community rated, you see. So these supplemental providers really are only looking at age of the applicants. And that will be, if the current bill that is in the House, they will also disallow consideration of medical conditions and pre-existing conditions and only allow the insurer to look at age. So that, I think, is something that where the community rating, and in fact, this country, it's been a long time, since the 60s, in which most insurance in this country was community rated. But what the current reforms that are being considered, many of the proposals, are really want the United States to return to that system. And the French have essentially held on to it. On the primary care physician, that is a problem in France in rural areas as well. And to the extent that there's lessons from France, we might look at what they're trying to do, which is similar to what's going on in this country already. I mean, there's a lot of talk in France about encouraging primary care physicians to move into rural areas and to practice there by paying them higher fees, because French physicians are paid on a fee schedule. In that sense, it's very similar to Medicare, and those fee schedules were negotiated about every 4 years. The leading physician organizations in France negotiate fee schedules with the Social Security, the French Social Security, and one of their ideas, of course, is to raise fees for primary care docs in rural areas to mm-hmm. have more available. But this is the dilemma that we face, really, and that's why France is so. Your question really brings this to light. This is why France is so interesting to look at, because they're running a national health insurance system, but they've got 95% of their ambulatory care docs are in private practice. What's called la médecine libérale in France. And many of those docs are in solo private practices. I mean, it's like the U.S. of the 50s almost, right? And it's fee for service. And it becomes very messy. If you want to keep your doctors with tremendous autonomy in terms of diagnosis and therapy, and they're operating as small businesses, but you also want to pay them through a national health insurance system, then it's going to be a messy situation, and you're going to have trouble, as the caller is alluding to, of getting docs into areas, in this case, rural areas,
right.
And recruiting them to go there.
Which is true in almost all parts of the world, isn't it? You hear, we did Canada a couple weeks ago. They're having a problem with rural areas, too, the United States rural areas. I would imagine it's true everywhere.
Yes, I think it is true everywhere. And, you know, part of it has to do with the fact that in the French case, the physicians come out of med school. They don't have the debts that American med school, diplome or, recent graduates have. But they want to practice in areas where they can charge more. And in France, actually, again, it comes back to these freedoms of the doctors. There's two basic sectors in which doctors can practice. Sector one, which is where most of the primary care docs practice, which means they accept as payment the negotiated fee schedule, right? And then there's sector two, which they can announce And that means that they can announce that to their patients, which means that they can actually charge more than the negotiated fee schedule, and their patients need to pay more, or their patients' insurance needs to pay a bit more. About 25% of French physicians practice in this Sector 2 circumstances, but most of them are in the metropolitan areas because that's where people have higher-paying jobs, you see. And so oftentimes there is this, in other words, it's a, as you said at the very top of the hour, Kathleen, it's a public-private mix, and that's what makes it messy. But what makes it so relevant to the American case?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Katie, for your call. Let's go next to Tom from Milwaukee. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I just have a little, I'm going to switch gears here, a personal anecdote that is that from a consumer's point of view, we were traveling in France 9 years ago. My son, who was in his 20s, had some kind of digestive disorder, and which he probably had before he went there. And it got to be pretty severe, so we were at that time in Avignon, which is a city of some significance, a small city, but of some significance, and I picked, so I think he needed to go to a doctor, so I picked one out of the phone book, being that it was near the hotel we were staying at, and I called, and the first question was, are you going to come into the office, or should there be a come there? And I said, well, I'll come into the office, and we went there, communicating in broken French and some broken English, and in the office, there was no receptionist, there was no nurse, it was just a doctor. It was one person ahead. The doctor called us in, and she, after about 20 minutes, she spent about 20 minutes talking to us, doing diagnosis, which would be a rarity here. When it was all over, she gave us the bill for the equivalent of 10 American dollars. This was in 2000, and gave three prescriptions. We went down the block to the pharmacy and spent another $10 getting those three prescriptions, and everything was fine. And, you know, so this was a whole different reality. And I've had people that have, friends that have gone to Greece that have similar stories.
And I'm sure you have stories, Dr. Dutton.
Absolutely. And he just told one that's very similar to, you know, oftentimes I have one, one of my sons seems to get nasal and ear infections a couple times a year, and it was a similar kind of story. We use the ambulatory, the outpatient system there in France, and this underlines a very important point here that points to sort of macroeconomic consequences. Going to a doctor's office and seeing essentially a physician and maybe a receptionist, in his case not apparently, but and a receptionist who doubles as a some sort of assistant is very common in France. And that says a lot about cost in the United States. I mean, I take now here in Arizona, when we're here, I take my both my sons that are age 9 and 11 to a pediatrician's office. There's 8 doctors there, all of them very good. But there's also a army of back office billing people there who have to deal with, and I happen to know, I've come to know the office manager there, they have to know how to deal with 100 different insurance companies and to do daily battle with them to get reimbursed for the services that they provide. So they're right there, and of course there's an equally large, if not larger, army at the insurers who are battling with the back office people at my my son's pediatrician's office. So this is something that we need to think about in serious terms as to how we can tackle this. And that, I think, the French system does provide some, at least a model, and I'm so glad that we're looking at it.
I found it so interesting when Tom said, do you want to come to our office or should we come to you? Do they still do house calls in France?
They do. Actually, the Sécurité Sociale is increasingly moving away from it. Again, you go back to your cost question, because they do have to pay transport costs to the docs, right, which they should. And so that's one of the things they're trying to cut down on. Now, in urgent cases, they have this thing in French called SOS médecin, médecin meaning doctor, where if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and your son or a child or a member of your family is running a temperature of 104, and can't move, boy, they are very quick to send not just paramedics, but physicians. And they drive these little Peugeots or something, and they have little lights on them, and they come very quickly, and that is covered by the National Health Insurance. And once again, it sounds generous and expensive, but you know what? In the long run, it's cheaper. If you can treat something that's very acute, very early, you can sometimes avoid very long hospital stays, which are ultimately more expensive.
Right. Yeah. Thanks very much for your call, Tom. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Healthcare reform is what we're generally talking about, and we're looking specifically at France today. We decided that as we debate this in the United States, we ought to look at other countries and see what works and what problems they're having. Should we borrow some ideas from a place like France or not? So that's what we're talking about this hour of the program. And our guest is the author of a couple books, and one of them deals specifically with comparisons. He's also, as you can tell by the quality of his French, lived in France. And the most recent book is Differential Diagnoses, A Comparative History of Healthcare Problems and Solutions in the United States and France. And he is a historian of European and American social reform. So we'll take more phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week, we will be looking at the kind of health package that members of Congress have. It's supposed to be pretty good. Why do they have that? And how are we funding that? And do we all want the same thing? So that's coming up next week. I want to go back to, we talk about this when we look at other countries, the will a country has to provide health insurance. When you look at the United States and you look at France, we have examined the issue and fought for the issues of liberty and equality and self-determination, et cetera. I'm wondering, is it that we look at democracy in a different way and one country includes health care as a right that individuals should have in addition to pursuit of happiness, and one country has decided that it's rugged individualism? I'm wondering, we're similar in so many ways. Why are we different on this important issue?
I think it's history. I think it's what happened in the 1930s in each respective country. In general, I think we can talk in terms of Europe versus U.S. here in these circumstances. I mean, if you look at France in particular during the 1930s, that country almost came apart. I mean, there were huge... The politics were very contentious. Riots were not uncommon. Violent political protests. There was a split between the extreme left, the Communist Party, and of course there were sort of budding fascist groups in France. At least political leaders who wanted to go the direction that the Germans were taking. And I think after that defeat at the Germans' hands in 1940. Which only lasted a battle. You know, the French army was seen as the best in Europe by both the American leaders and the Soviet at the time, and was defeated by the Germans in 6-8 weeks. And I think that humiliation caused a lot of introspection in France. It was a psychological defeat as well as a military one. So after the war and during the war, and I've gone through and spent a lot of time in the archives looking at the discussions among the leaders, de Gaulle and the others who would become the leaders of France, and they decided that, you know what, when we put this country back together, right, after 1945, we need to do it in a way that is really encourages and demands solidarity among the peoples. And one of the things that they included in that was a system of health care. And so that's where you get, it wasn't like the British system where they moved very quickly into a health service, right? Very different, and I should say this, let me just say parenthetically here, is that the French consider the British health care system to be socialized medicine. Mm-hmm. In other words, they use it as an epithet, as the same way it's used by those more in the center and on the right in this country. And the service de santé, as they call it, in France is a bad word. And so the French, as you said in your question, really, they have much more in common in terms of their healthcare ideals than with the Americans than we do or the French do with the British. So that's really where, as moving forward, they started down the road. It wasn't as quick, but they started down a road that would eventually bring health insurance, but not a health service to the entire country. The experience in this country, of course, as you know, and many of your listeners have heard the story, you know, this country did not face tremendous infrastructure damage during the Second World War. In fact, much of the workforce was fighting in Asia and in Europe. And so we had a trouble, of course, with inflation. And so the federal government put wage price guidelines in place so employers couldn't raise their labor rates to attract more workers or to retain good workers. And instead, what they did was they offered what they called at that time fringe benefits. They offered health insurance. And that's really where the employer link with our health insurance really took off, was during the 1940s.
Let's go to more phone calls. Mike from Oshkosh, our next caller. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I'm so glad to have caught this program today. I'm flying out on September 6th to close on a house in the Morbihan area of Brittany in France.
Mm-hmm. Oh. All right.
And I'm wondering if your guest can give me some hints as to what I can expect over there. I know that I have to have proof of insurance to get a long-term visa.
Yes.
But I'm wondering if I can somehow or another insert myself into the French healthcare system at some point in time.
Well, that's a good question. I think that you will have trouble unless you go the full step of immigration, of inserting yourself into la sécu, which is the short term for sécurité sociale. And so I would say that in the beginning. However, that doesn't mean that you can't take advantage of it, because as one of the previous callers noted, the fees are physicians make less, and their overhead costs are substantially less. And so your fees, when you go to the doctor there, you may well find yourself being able to pay out of pocket rather relatively easy for, routine care that you might need. For children, and this gives me the opportunity to emphasize something, because sometimes I use this, and certainly I did when we first arrived in France, for children, if you do have children, the French have a wonderful system that they call mothers and infants and children's health centers. It's kind of convoluted because the translation is there. But they treat, actually, without question of immigration status or, you know, passport, whatever passport you hold, they treat children and mothers for prenatal, postpartum care at no cost. And so that is something, and it's one of the reasons why the infant mortality rate in France is among the best in the world. And frankly, if we're going to look at an H1N1 epidemic this fall and winter, I think I won't be in France, but something tells me I'd rather be there, because the kids in school are going to be able to get the care, regardless of insurance status, that they need. So that is something that I think that you can look at. Healthcare is quite, access is quite easy. I don't know how rural the area that you're going to be in is. Brittany is certainly a beautiful place. It has large cities and a lot of rural villages and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. It's a tiny village by the name of La Trinité Prohet, uh-huh. Which is north of Vannes. It's between Vannes and Sombriac.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay. Beautiful area. Really mm-hmm. nice. And I wish you the best there.
From what I'm hearing from you, it sounds as if the out-of-pocket costs may be at or lower than my deductibles, so I should just, in most cases, go ahead and pay it.
You might find that useful. When last time I was on sabbatical there for a year, and I just found I was able to get reimbursement at 50 cents on the dollar from Blue Cross Blue Shield, but that's going to vary with your own insurer and whether it's worth it to file the paperwork and the deductible, as you say.
And thanks for your call. Thank you so much, Dr. Paul Dutton, for being with us this hour. It was really interesting.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Our pleasure. Associate Professor of History Paul Dutton, our guest, and he is also the author of a couple books for those who want to delve into the topic more deeply, Differential Diagnoses, A Comparative History of Healthcare Problems and Solutions in the United States and France, also author of The Origins of the French Welfare State. He has obviously lived in France for several years and spends a great deal of time there. And we thank Jolima Noel for doing the production on this program, and to John Treader for on-air production in our Milwaukee studios. A couple things to remind you of. Next week at this time, the special system that members of Congress have in the United States as we continue our series of programs on health care. And a reminder, September 16, we're doing a major two-hour broadcast from Frederick Hospital here in Milwaukee. And another reminder, tomorrow we will pay tribute to Walter Cronkite during this hour and also talk to Christiane Amanpour. So, thanks for listening.